do, or can find one nearby, find, please, James chapter 5 in it. James chapter 5. Well, Mindy, you're not the only one in our midst who struggles with talking, maybe, when we ought to be quiet. Isn't it hard, Christian friends, to know what point God wants us to act and when he wants us just to sit still and be still? That's why we need the Word of God, and we need the Spirit of God to prompt us with that. We're coming very, very close to the end of the book of James. Somebody might say, I'm so glad James didn't have 25 chapters, but we've been coming along for several months now, and we're to the last chapter of this great practical book of James. And we've been looking for, at least I've been calling it, checks on our faith, something to look for to discover where our heart is, our trust in God, whether we're even really part of his family or not. And in chapter 4, more recently, we saw the check about wars. It says back in 4, where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your own desires and pleasures that war in your members? That's one of the challenges. How am I doing? How are you doing with all of the conflicts in our own hearts? God wants to have victories there. We looked at worldliness as another place to check our faith. Chapter 4, again, beginning of verse 4, talks about friendship with the world. And maybe you've won that battle. In fact, maybe I would put myself in this category, have in some ways externally come so far away from the world that I don't know how to get back to talk with people who are not part of the family of God. I need help in that. But I want to tell you, I still have got the same desires as the world in my heart. Do you? John describes it as the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's the world system in a nutshell. How am I doing? How are you doing in that faith check? We looked at the will of God. James brought us there beginning in verse 13. Come now, you who say today and tomorrow we're going to do this, when we haven't even been still, like the song just said, and said, God, if it be your will, lead me here. And then chapter 5, wealth, and how I was challenged and encouraged as well from James's word and from Pastor Brian's preaching on wealth. That's a rubber meets the road topic, isn't it? Where does wealth come into our life? What does it mean to make an idol out of money? It's making a good thing into a God thing, somebody said. I think that was in the message that Pastor Brian brought. Using personal pronouns. You know, when I counsel people who are having money problems, I often hear them saying, yours, mine. His, hers. Instead of ours. And furthermore, even above that, I don't hear sometimes when there's conflict, people saying, it's yours, it's yours. So James challenges us about using money as a good, not a God thing. Hoarding it, gaining it dishonestly, James talked about. Squandering it on pleasures as the number one priority. Lacking generosity when we do have it. And so what a faith check that is to us, our wealth. Well, here we are today, beginning in verse 7 through 12, waiting. What a challenge to our faith it is to be slowed down when we want to be going full speed ahead, to be pulled forward when we wanted to stay where I am, waiting on the Lord. I made some observations as I looked through these 7 to 12 verses, verses 7 through 12. I noticed that the word brothers is used 4 times. This is family talk here. This is inside the bonds of Christ. 4 times. Coming of the Lord is mentioned 3 times. When we're waiting, it's not for nothing. The Lord has promised that he's going to be present and going to be coming, showing up one of these days. The name Lord is used 5 times. Of all the titles for God, it's Lord that is in this segment on waiting. It's reminding ourselves, who's the boss? The Lord. When we don't feel like we are in charge, Lord. 3 examples are given. We're going to camp on those here in just a few minutes. And the word patience comes up over and over and over again, 4 times in particular. Does it seem to you, as you have lived these days, that the goal of a lot of technology lately is to actually keep us not having to wait, to make the need for patience less and less? Some of you are going to go on summer vacation. Some of you are going to be traveling along the highways this summer. What a change has been happening in technology that affects our vacations then and now. I remember when I was younger, going out with a car ride. What did you do? What did I do all those miles and miles and miles? I remember one summer, our family with four of us kids and our two parents drove all the way to Indiana and then back. That's a long way from Homer, New York. What do you do? What do you do mile after mile? I'll tell you what we did back then. We played license plate games. Did you ever play those license plate games where you're watching the cars go by? You say, oh, there's Arizona, right down Arizona, right? In fact, sometimes we had these little magnetized boards with the map of America on it, and you put a little sticker or a little magnet thing on there when the state went by. Did you do that? Anybody else do that? Was it just Depew thing? Okay, some of you guys did that too. How about the signs, A to Z? We'd start with A, and we'd be looking out the window. Not the driver. We got in trouble when they played the games. With driver, you can't play games. And the kids are in the back seat playing games. And, oh, there's Aldi's. I see Aldi's. I got an A. And then you look down there. There's a beech tree. I got a B. And we go all through the alphabet. Any of you guys do that? Yeah, okay, that's not so old. I spy with my little eye. You play that game while you're going down the road? Yeah, that was fun to try to stump people about that. Yeah, I spy with my little eye. Yeah, that was a different game. My parents didn't buy that game. Yeah. Read sometimes. My sister could read books and not throw up. It was something that I didn't inherit in the day. But even having books there was amazing. Mom's travel fun kit. Did your mom have one of those? She'd bring it along with her. Just pull it out during the trips. I mean, you can't play these games any other time, just when we're going down the road. Route 66 was what it was like in my day. Wow, things have changed. So that we don't have to wait. We aren't bored, it seems like. We've all got devices now. We've all got cars with videos that we can plug in. We've got GPS. We don't even know how to read maps anymore. And air conditioning, you know what the air conditioning was in your day, right? Roll down the windows and go, what? How fast? 55. That was our air conditioning system. And it wasn't Route 66, it was Route 86. Get there, man. It seems like patience is no longer a virtue anymore, right? Eating then and now. Think of all the stuff that has caused us not to be patient around mealtime. It used to be gardening. And then you come out of the garden and you can it, or you freeze it, or you raise it out in the field out there. Or you shoot it out in the field there. Some of you still do that. You're way out of date. You mix it then and you pour it, you bake it. You broil it, you boil it, you fry it. You had good plates that you used at mealtime. I remember when we went from there to Tupperware. Do you remember that? And then Corelware came along, and now it's just paperware, it seems like, because we don't want to be bogged down with having to deal with messes. We just nuke it. That's what we call it in our house when you microwave it. You nuke it. And you go through drive-thrus, and that's not fastest anymore. You got to have express lane drive-thrus, right? And it's no longer Tupperware. It's disposable ware. Entertainment. How many of you know what that thing is? It goes 33 times per minute around, I think. It's called a phonograph record. Phono meaning sounds, graph meaning writing. They used to write sounds on that. Can you believe it? Phonograph records. How many of you recognize this one and ever seen it? Oh, now it goes 45 times around. Life is getting faster when we get that going around and around. How many of you ever remember those? Have you ever seen those before? That's a track 8 tapes. How many of you seen these? We had a ton of them until clean out day in our church just a few months back. Yeah, cassette tapes. Oh. Did you get one of those for Christmas one time? How many of you don't even know what that is? you are just an educated crew here today. ViewMaster. And my grandpa and grandma had one that looked a lot different than that I used. There were two things that you looked in. It was amazing. This was a tool that I loved in history class. I was teaching. The kids wanted this when I was teaching history. Who knows what that is? It's a film strip projector. They couldn't wait for Pastor DePew, Teacher DePew, whatever they called me in that day, to bring in the current event film strips. It was the highlight of my classes. Oh, did you have to deal with this? Talking about slowing things down. Did you ever run it and it breaks? Been there, done that. Didn't you love that chatter sound that went with this? Oh my, the things we've lost. No comments from anybody here. This, in my world, is cutting edge technology. Help them out, Carol. Help them out. When you were going to school, what did it look like? Did you ever have to go to one of these places? It's called a library. It's a place where they store things that are important if you're wanting to study. Did you ever use one of these tools? Yeah, it's got a data entry end and a delete button on the other side. It was perfect in the day. It was just perfect. How many of you know what that little bottle is filled with? Some of you still got it all over your screen on the computer. You haven't figured. That's whiteout, right? Oh, some of you don't even know what that is. Microfiche. How many of you never heard of microfiche before? Phil, come on. This is called a Dewey Decimal Card system, and that helps drive you through that upper corner one with called the library. But today, no. Just Google it. Haven't the conversations got different at your family reunion? When you say things like, do you remember the words to that song? Instead of having to think about it, you say, I'll Google it. Boom, there it is. And they'll even sing it for you. Right? And some of us don't even go to libraries anymore. Frankly, and with all seriousness, this is what we're wrestling with a media center. Where does it fit in a world that has gone so fast and so far from stuff that was once normal? And common. And what is the way to utilize what we have in a world that doesn't connect with it anymore? That's a challenge. Impatience is a reality, isn't it? In our world, sometimes spilling over to painful relationships. Don't have time to slow down. Don't have time to talk it out. Don't have time to think it through. And on the excuses can go. And all most harmfully is the place that not waiting on the Lord can have in our faith and our relationship with God. When it seems as though life and our life and our experiences in particular, and I think in the context that James is talking about, when our relationships are just going a thousand miles an hour. I notice at the beginning of verse number 7, back to James chapter 5, verse 7, that he uses the word therefore. And so he's throwing us back to that whole conflict that we have with finances and back to chapter 4 of business relationships and on. Therefore, be patient, he says, verse 7, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient, he says to us. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Don't grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. He can see it all. He knows it all. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and have seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes, let your no be no, lest you fall into judgment. Be men and women of our word. God's going to keep his word. He's coming again. I think James ends with this. You reflect that in the way you interact with people. Sometimes on social media or on YouTube, I see something, somebody posts something, and it says right at the top, wait for it. And the message is given that if you just let this play out long enough, it'll be worth the wait. You ever seen that? Wait for it. Or scroll down on this, you're going to see it at the bottom. Well, James here, by the Spirit of God, is saying, now, you brothers who are in the family of God, who are going through challenges and changes, wait for it. Wait for it. There's some things that you are learning in the midst of this. Wait for it, he says in verse number 7, like a farmer. Do you see it there, verse 7? Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits. And how does the farmer wait? The farmer waits and works. In the Bible, there are several descriptions or metaphors or hooks that the Christian life is hung on. One is a soldier. Sometimes we're called, as followers of Jesus Christ, we're called soldiers. And that emphasizes the conflicts that we get involved in with the world, the flesh, and the devil, and with the authority that we answer to, the chief of hosts, the Lord of hosts himself. And so we're called soldiers, and there's risk involved, and there's activity with that. We're called athletes sometimes in the Bible. Did you notice that? Paul, in particular, seemed to be tied into the athletic world, and the people who he was ministering to in the Greek world knew about the Olympics that they had back in the day like we have today. Athletics is all about people being prepared and completing the job, finishing the race, being trained so as not to be cast away, as Paul would say. But we're to wait like farmers. You know, farming is not as exciting as being a soldier, usually, or as being even an athlete. It's just being faithful and working hard. It's working hard when nobody else is up. It's working hard when nobody else shows up. It's working hard when nobody else knows you're up in some ways. And so be patient, wait. And he uses this out of three illustrations in this passage. The farmer, wait for it, Christian brothers and sisters, wait for it like the farmer. Be patient in your waiting. Wait like a farmer. Farmers work hard when they over things that they can control. Foolish is the farmer that goes out beside the field and says, oh, God in heaven, plow this field for me, right? Foolish is the farmer that goes out later on and says, oh, God in heaven, plant this field for me. You know what's going to happen? It's going to get planted, all right, but with what? Weeds, yeah. And so there's things that a farmer knows is in his or her domain. And so when we wait like a farmer, it doesn't mean we don't work, that there's nothing that we would do in the midst of this time frame. There's certain things that God is challenging you to just step out and obey him on, to take the initiative in, to reckon with and make the adjustments for. So wait, yes, but like a farmer, working personally hard on those things that God has given you direction in, but trusting God deeply with those things that can't be controlled. I put the word controlled up in quotes there. Have you ever noticed even the things that I feel like I can control, I don't really control completely? You ever notice that? Even the stuff I feel like I've got under control sometimes just spins away. Let's rest in the fact that there's one called the Lord of hosts, for whom nothing spins out of the way, out of control. And so a farmer, yes, works hard personally, but then trusts God deeply with his part. And James talks about the former and the latter rains. Who controls the rain system? Friends, we could talk hours and hours about global warming and the footprint of carbon and all the stuff that supposedly controls that. In my way of thinking, that is minimal, I think biblically as well, to the role that God has already placed in his order. We sang songs about how he calls up the tempests, and James echoes this in verse number 7, waiting patiently for the stuff that the farmer can't control, receiving the early and the latter rain, and all the challenge between the earlier and the latter, right? That space in there where we don't know if it's when it's going to start again, and the crops have gotten a good jump on it, and it's coming, and the sun's beating down. When's the next blessing, Lord of rain? We don't know that. And the farmer is our model, James says, as we're testing our faith. Oh, God, am I waiting on you, doing what I know personally, but frankly saying, God, you know where I'm at. You know the bills. You know the circumstances of life. You know the relationships that need to fall into place if this is going to work. Oh, God, take control. Wait like a farmer for the precious fruit that is coming. And James mentions that, waiting patiently for it until it receives the earlier and latter rain, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. See how the farmer waits, he says there, verse 7, for the precious fruit. What is the precious fruit that we wait for? We wait for the character. I've jumped out of the cornfield now, of the farmer physically, into our hearts now. What are we waiting for? What's God wanting to produce in us in that period of time when we can't see the time frame yet? He wants to produce the character of Christ. We've already seen that back in James chapter 1. Let me just rehearse that and read those three verses, 1, verses 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Are you in a trial time? Knowing this, rest on this, grab onto this, don't let this slip by you, knowing this, that the testing of your faith is producing patience. And let patience have its maturing work, that you may be mature and complete, lacking nothing. God's got a master plan. James has already reminded us of that. And now the farmer waiting for precious fruit. Oh, that's the kind of precious fruit that patience makes, character of Christ in us now, and the coming of Christ soon. We don't know when. James talks about it here, the coming of the Lord. Be patient until the coming of the Lord. Do you see that as a cop-out? Or do you see that as a lifeboat? Oh, we're just waiting until God comes. I think sometimes Christians can take that as a cop-out. You know, things are going so wild and so woolly in this world. We're just going to hole up until the Lord comes. We aren't given that privilege to know when that's going to happen. We don't know. Jesus said when the hour is or when the day is when he's going to come. And so we work faithfully at what we know he wants us to do until the Lord comes. But he says he's imminently coming. And oh, what a change. You think those pictures that we looked at were a change in our lifetime? Look at what's going to happen in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye. If you want to look at it, Revelation 21, verse 1, now I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also, there was no more sea. And he writes down in verse number 4, and God at that time will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There will be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. There will be no need for radio news reports and newspapers that seem to gain readership and money by all the bad stuff that's happening. That'll be gone. And he who sat on the throne said, behold, I make all things new, verse 5. And he said to me, write this, for this is true. That's the fruit that waiting is meant to produce, according to back to James chapter 5, verse 7, the coming of the Lord and a longing for that. Those who love his appearing, that's a sign that our faith is in the right place and in the right person. Be patient, therefore, verse 8, James 5, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Wait like a farmer, working hard personally, trusting the Lord deeply. Precious fruit is coming. Meanwhile, verse number 9, in the midst of the waiting, when the pressure's on, James, by the Spirit of God, says this, don't grumble, don't judge. Do not grumble, verse 9 says, against the one another, brethren. That's one of those one another commands that we don't think of very often. We think of love one another, pray for one another, be patient with one another, forgive one another. Those are great. Here's a negative side. Don't grumble against one another, lest you be condemned. How can I stop grumbling when I just don't know who's in control? I can when I realize that the judge is standing at the door. The one who knows and discerns it all, that's what a judge does, is right at the door, observing it all, got it under control. And I'm going to rest my case, I'm going to rest my waiting soul in the judge who's at the door, right there. He's not missing a beat. He knows it all. Grumbling means to groan or sigh. Brethren, it's a family frustration in this context that appears. Judge is the father who says this in Romans 14, who are you to judge another's servant? To his own master, that could be a capital M if we wanted to, he stands or falls. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand. So let's let God be the judge. We have his word. We've got the Spirit of God that directs us. But don't grumble during that waiting period when we don't see it all yet. And there's periods of time for all of us in that way. I'm reminded of that parable that Jesus taught of the unforgiving servant who, though he was forgiven a multi-million-dollar debt, somehow judged his fellow servant who just owed a $100 debt. And Jesus said, you foolish person, you're going to get what you deserve. If it is possible, Paul writes in Romans 12, as much as this depends on you, live peacefully with all men. That's a challenge with some people, isn't it? But as much as is in you, you can't answer for their response. But you can answer and will answer to the judge for your peaceableness. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord, the judge. Who do you need to be more patient with in your world right now? At home, when you leave this room, when you go back to your home, who do you need to be patient with? At school, tomorrow, when you go down that hallway or into that class or into that gymnasium or in that lunchroom, who do you need to be patient with? Has God put a face and a name in your mind? At work, at church, in your neighborhood, be patient. Stamped over every single one of those places and every single one of the people represented in those places is the word either salvation, they need Christ, or sanctification, they're becoming more like Christ. Aren't you glad that God gives you and me time and room to grow? Make sure we give each other time and room to grow. God doesn't cause us to grow up the same speed, does he? There's a waiting period. There's a patience track. There's a learning curve. There's all those dynamics that the Spirit of God works into our lives when we are waiting on the Lord. Let's remember that God's got it under control. So patience like a farmer, working while we're waiting. Patience, number two, quickly, like the prophets, suffer while waiting. Ouch. I don't like this one, but James brings us to it in verse number 10. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Farmers are working while they're patient. Prophets are suffering while they're patient. This is even harder, it would seem to me. Who are the prophets and how do they suffer? Jeremiah got thrown into a cistern. That's like a water source. Thrown into prison. Ezekiel, exiled to Babylon in the Old Testament. Daniel, exiled as a teenager from his hometown, hundreds of miles across the desert to Babylon, ends up in a lion's den. Unnamed group of people, Hebrews, I'm going to read it for you. Listen to this description of suffering and waiting on things, beginning in verse 32. And what more shall I say? The writer of Hebrews writes, for the time would fail me to tell you of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, Daniel, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to fight the armies of aliens. Their wives and the women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trials of mocking and scourging, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were cut in two. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered around in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. Prophets. And so back to James chapter 5, consider the prophets while you're waiting and suffering. And consider Jesus, Hebrews 12, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is now sat down on the right hand of the Father. Look to him. If you're fainting and feeling as though you've gone as far as you can go, that's a rough paraphrase. No one gets out of Genesis 3 world unscathed. You know what happened in Genesis 3, right? The perfectness of what God had created for us was marred and broken and fallen. And now we live in a world like that. And we don't come out unscathed. We suffer in many, many ways. Patience like farmers. Work while waiting. Patience like prophets. Suffer while waiting. And lastly, patience like Job. That jumped up to my mind before James even said it there, verse number 11. Trust while waiting. Verse 11, indeed, we count them blessed to endure. You've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. There were days and weeks and maybe even months, where Job did not feel the mercy and the compassion of God. What did Job discover when all was said and done about his God? That Satan is real, but he's on a leash. Have you forgotten that in the midst of your waiting? Satan's not in control. He had to ask God for permission to do anything in Job's world. Still does. That lets me know that there's a leash on this roaring lion who seeks to devour you and me. And God will only let him go so far. It's like an invisible barrier. That's it. Satan hates that. Job discovered that friends can help and friends can hurt. In the middle of our waiting, sometimes we tend to rest on people. And God wants us to do that in so many ways, but when all is said and done, there's a friend beyond the brother. Job discovered that faith will be tested like gold. Yes, it will. Intense heat so that junk rises up and gets scooped away. Job discovered that joy can be stolen in a moment, in a storm, in an attack on your own family. But he learned that it can be restored as well. Stolen, but restored. Job discovered that God is God and I am not. And for chapter after chapter in his diary, in the book written with his name on it, he was silent. In fact, he said, I put my hand on my mouth. I was dead silent in the midst of learning more about who I am compared to who you are. Job discovered, however, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. And I don't know how his mercy and compassion is going to play out in your world, but he's the same God as then as he was today. And so James says, learn from him. Impatience is a reality, isn't it, in your world and mine? Some of us seem to have genetic impatience. We're just born impatient. We came out of the womb impatient. We can blame it on anything we want, but now that you are a born-again follower of Jesus Christ, now what are you going to do with that? What am I going to do with the relationships that can become tumultuous and troublesome? Patience is a reality. Certainly, in the midst of those, let's not heap on those troubles my own impatience on top of that. That usually really helps, right? When you push an already troublesome period faster. God help you and me. Patience is a reality, sometimes spilling over painfully into relationships and most harmfully into our faith relationship with God. Frankly, at this moment, that's what I'm concerned about for you and me. That we would not lose our confidence in God. That somehow he's lost control of the steering wheel of our lives. That we're waiting and nobody's really on our side in heaven. God help you and me in those moments to be able to hear again from him, to see again in his word, to see it echoed in a relationship of someone around us who's a follower of Jesus Christ. Okay, God, I can't hear you very well right now, but I know you're there. You've been there for the Jobs and the prophets and the farmers of life. I'm going to trust that you'll be there for me and are there. So a faith check this morning, dear friend. With God's help, I will be patient like farmers. I'll work while I wait. Like prophets, I'll suffer while I wait. And like Job, I'll trust while I wait. God help us to examine ourselves on that light. There's a modern example I want to close with, and Ann's going to help with this. Anybody here recognize this guy? His name is Ron Hamilton. And he is the creator of something called Patch Club. And now you're saying, oh, yeah, I've heard of Patch Club. We have a group in our church that's that. Yeah, you're right. Where did that come from? It came from 30-plus years ago when God told a young Ron Hamilton, I've got a plan for you that you are would not have seen coming. I'm going to give cancer to one of your eyes. That's why that picture has him with a patch. That's not just a Halloween costume. That's a real result of a real operation of a 20-year-old or young 20-year-old person who ends up with one eye gone. And out of that experience, can you imagine the impatience that a young man might have felt in those days? Out of that experience, Ron Hamilton has been used of God for multiple years, including a song called Rejoice in the Lord. I'm going to sing the verse for you. If you know it, join in with me, and the chorus will sing twice. And maybe it'll be a blessing to your heart and just a capstone to James chapter 5.